And welcome back to the big broadcast. Homelessness prevention funding to increase. This is from Valerie McDonald, Northumberland Today. This is from 10 days ago. After 2 years of stalled provincial government, homelessness prevention funding yearly increases to 2019 and 2020 will bring it to over $1.1 million in Northumberland County. That according to an announcement from the Housing and Poverty Reduction Ministry. I actually have a ministry responsible for this now, listeners. The 100% funding for the program ups the $881,300 funding for 2015, 16, and 16 and 17 to $968,000 in 2017-18 and just over $1 million by 2018-2019. So again, a lot of patting each other on the back. The year after that, the funding will be $1.14 million, a media release stated. But Northumberland County Warden Gil Brockenier acknowledged that 100% funding for Community Homelessness Prevention Initiative and noted that through its recent surveying, the county has found the problem of homelessness is growing. No kidding. Through the national 20,000 housing project and the surveys being done, we are starting to get a better picture of homelessness in the county. And unfortunately, it's revealing an increasing challenge, but we will be in a better position to know where to direct money, Brockenier says. Last year across Ontario, there were 40,000 homeless people helped to find shelter. Another 115,000 families who were helped to stay in their homes, states the government release. Additional funding is to meet the growing need, including here in the county. Now, through the program, service managers throughout the Northumberland service area can use funding to deliver the housing and homelessness-related services that best suit their communities, including financial assistance and education programs to help poverty, to help prevent eviction. So let people know what their rights are, I assume. Long-term and transitional housing with related supports and emergency shelters for those experiencing a crisis. The provincial goal is to end chronic homelessness by 2025. Housing and Poverty Reduction Minister Chris Ballard stated that we're helping Ontarians most vulnerable take the first step out of poverty by arming communities with the tools they need to help individuals and families access services and safe, affordable housing. But what they're not saying is they're not building any housing. So, you know, you raised an interesting point, Paula. You said that this is going to help, what, two people?
Yeah.
Two people. Wow.
Their plan is to house two people by 2018. I could house them all. If they handed that money to me tomorrow, mm-hmm. I could house them all tomorrow.
Well, it certainly begs the question, you know, what are they doing with this money? I mean, you know, what are they doing? They're talking to people about their rights as tenants from what I hear. Are they building anything? Are they actually going to be opening any houses for people? Are there any suites being open, any apartments? I mean, I think you told me before we went on air that the number of people on the waiting list here in the county is how many people at this point?
The most recent numbers I got was 484. And those are applications. It could be for a single person. It could be for a family. So we don't know the number of people mm-hmm. on the waiting list. We do know that 37% of the people on that waiting list are seniors, which certainly tells us that senior poverty is an issue for Northumberland mm-hmm. County. And how could it not be when 38% of the county population is over age 55?
Well, and the report, I was talking to Kim Rudd about this yesterday at TV Kojiko, and she said that the number by 2018 or 2019-2020 is going to be closer to 50% with the number of seniors in this because of the aging population, apparently. So those numbers are only going to go up, and yet the solutions appear to be throwing money at it, but who's getting the money? How are they?
Well, the agencies are getting it all, mm-hmm. and I do want to give, I guess, a bit of a plug to the Northumberland Community Legal Center because they are the legal aid clinic that sticks up for tenants' rights and helps people go to court against their landlords. No other organization has lawyers on board ready to do that. Mm-hmm. And I would point out that the county is now a big-time landlord. When Mike Harris shut down the housing authorities, the 344 units in Northumberland fell under the county's wing. And now all of the nonprofit projects are as well. So they're landlords, they're not tenants. And they're landlords who have a pretty big repair bill mm-hmm. for those 500 odd units that need to be fixed. I would hope that some of the homelessness money is going to go to repair those units. You were talking, Dave, about how Toronto is shuttering over 400 rent geared to income units because they're in such disrepair. We don't want to see that happening in Northumberland. And some of the original Ontario housing units were built 30, 40 years ago. They need upgrading.
Well, part of the problem, now, again, what we hear from people on a lot of occasions, and you know, I'm just being the devil's advocate here, we hear a lot of times that, well, the reason those units are in such disrepair is because the tenants are so awful and they don't care about the places. You know, they do things like pee in the elevators and they punch holes in walls and nobody really cares about their property. It's that whole, if you will, renters, low-income renter mentality. How much of that is based in reality and how much of that is just perpetuating a myth, do you think, Deb?
It's perpetuating a myth. I lived in the Ontario housing in Cobourg for 8 years with my two kids. And it was a neighborhood like any other neighborhood. There were bad neighbors. They were mostly good neighbors. And I built friendships with some of those people that I'm still friends with now. When the time came that my income rose to a level where I didn't need the housing and my kids were off on their own, what happened then was the rent would keep going up and up and up. And so you move out. And that's exactly what they're designed to do. The 8 years that my kids and I spent in that housing on Elgin Street in Cobourg made a huge difference to our lives and certainly for my kids as they were just getting into the preteen and teenage years as opposed to living over a bank downtown. Our quality of life was much, much better. We need the province and the federal government to get back in the housing business and build affordable housing. The tenants aren't any different than tenants anywhere else.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the federal government here because that is that has been a real stumbling block. I mean, for all provincial governments, particularly here in Ontario, because that's where we live. I mean, the biggest obstacle has been lack of funding. They, you know, again, because they've done things like slash corporate taxes. They've done things like remove certain barriers for with regards to income tax. And so they're not bringing in more money. In fact, they're bringing in less money than they were 30, 40 years ago. So the result, of course, is that when you have less money, you have, you know, other priorities. And for whatever reason, poverty reduction isn't a priority. How do you convince provincial governments and people like Lou Rinaldi and other members of provincial parliament that, you know, getting these people to a position where they are paying taxes should be the goal? I mean, really, what you want is you want people to be productive, quote unquote, productive members of society. Those are people who pay taxes. So you got to get people to that level. I mean, we can continue to lock people into poverty, which doesn't benefit anybody. It just continues to cost all of us more money. Or we can create a situation where people are being risen up out of poverty. It doesn't seem to me like that's been much of a goal for any level of government.
Well, I think we can lay the blame for that on all the poor bashing that's been going on. Because as long as the general public thinks people on welfare are lazy bums, the politicians aren't going to act. It's not popular.
Well, but your point is that the overwhelming number in the province right now, the number of people on ODSP has actually surpassed the number of people on general assistance. So now we're not talking about people who are bums. We're talking about people who are disabled.
Disabled bums, that's right.
You know.
And you see the attacks coming on them the same as they're coming on ordinary people on welfare. You've got, I know the debate in Port Hope about Port Hope Transit is looming in Cobourg as well. And there are people who figure that if you don't have a car, that's just too bad. You've got no right to get around the community to do your business. And certainly for disabled people, a lot of them are not in vehicles and never will be. They need that public transit. It's very discouraging to see the hate that is out there being directed at low-income people.
So how do we change that narrative?
I'm still working on that. Paula, do you have that figured out yet?
Not yet, but I do think that there are four basic things that everybody is entitled to just simply because they take a breath, simply because they're alive. And one of them is safe and stable housing. Another one is good, nutritious food so that they can maintain their health. And then to go with that, we need health care. There are a lot of people currently who even their mental health, due to the stresses of being having to have to work within a system that doesn't work for them mm-hmm. is deteriorating their overall sense of health, and they need an education. And I think that once we establish those four main cornerstones, that everything else will fall into place.
Well, we know the province has been talking about and floating the idea of a basic income. Maybe we should create a basic income. There is a resolution from Hugh Siegel, Senator Hugh Siegel, who says it's hard to conclude that the income support that's now available for those living in poverty is adequate in any meaningful way. And he says, be it resolved that the Ontario government immediately raise the Ontario Works rate for a single individual to $1,320 per month and raise ODSP rates by $500 a month at least. That would give someone on ODSP somewhere in the area of $680 a month. All in favor, raise your hands. And of course, when you raised this issue at the meeting last week, the majority of people in the room raised their hands. They were supportive of this.
I'm told about two-thirds of the people there raised their hands.
Mm-hmm. Well, as it states here in this piece, why wait to raise the rates? I mean, there really is no reason for delay. It takes a little something called political will.
It does. And I think that the province is just using the basic income consultation as another way to put everything off. There will be a provincial election mm-hmm. before this pilot project is even off the ground. And then after the pilot project time period ends, guess what they're going to do? They're going to study it. And they're probably going to do another round of consultations. Meanwhile, children are growing up without decent food to eat and a mm-hmm. decent place to live. Quit playing around and do it. I'm not that big a fan of the basic income idea because I think people are jumping on a bandwagon without knowing what mm-hmm. they're jumping onto.
Right.
Because we have no idea what it's going to be. Finland is just launching a pilot project right now that's going to pay individuals $800 a month. Well, in Ontario, an individual on welfare gets $705 a month. So tell me how an increase of $80, $90 is going to change that person's life. It's certainly not going to be adequate, and it's not going to get anybody where they need to go.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have a lot of confidence that anything Ontario comes up with is going to be much different than what they're doing in Finland. And that is no solution, none at all. People need an increase. They need it now. And some of us who've been saying this for a long time are getting more and more angry about the delaying tactics while whole generations of children grow up without enough.
Well, and to your point, I mean, they'll do it and then they'll consult. The only real successful pilot project done in this country was in Dauphin Swan River in Manitoba. That was done. They shelved it. The reports were put on the shelf until about 4 years ago when someone decided to actually go through the reams and reams and boxes of information to try and put together some type of resolution or some types of clear observation. So they're still going through that data. And that was in 1975, if I remember correctly.
It was in the mid-70s when I was on the board of the National Anti-Poverty Organization. We were certainly familiar with the Dauphin experiment.
Mm-hmm.
And it is something that was actually canceled partway through when there was a change in the federal government.
Right.
So it wasn't even completed. And the initial findings from the portion of the study that were completed did show that people were better off.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't mean everybody getting the basic income quit their jobs and stayed home.
No, the opposite was true, actually.
Yeah, the opposite was true, and kids stayed in school longer.
Mm-hmm.
It was all good, but it was also an adequate amount of money. And that's my big concern, is that their definition of basic is not going to be anywhere close to what my definition or Paula's definition of mm-hmm. basic and adequate might be.
Well, one of the points you raised when I spoke with you yesterday was the fact that the MPP said, the poor come to us all the time. How much is enough? How much money is enough? We're going to talk about that when we come back. By the way, the lines are open. If you'd like to give us a call, maybe you have a solution. Maybe you have a comment at 905-372-2321 or 905-372-2391. We will be back after this break.
Farley Mowing, Marie Dressler, James Coburn, and the great Farini. You will hear their stories and many more as Northumberland 89.7 presents Northumberland 150, created and presented by musician and lifelong resident Cale Crowe. This 50-part series will spotlight truly local stories from the past century and a half. Northumberland 150, heard every Tuesday at 8:40 a.m., Thursday at 2:40 p.m., Saturday at 11:40 a.m., and each weekly episode will be available on podcast. Celebrate Canada's 150th birthday with us as we present Northumberland 150 right here on Northumberland 89.7 Truly Local Radio.
Tune in Mondays, 10 to 11 p.m. for Guitar Gear and More, brought to you by Long & McQuaid Musical Instruments, the show that reviews guitar gear and more and then showcases the bands who made it happen. You'll hear interviews with local talent and a special Long & McQuaid segment that keeps you in the loop of upcoming music trends and events, plus expert tips from our Long & McQuaid experienced instructors. Guitar Gear and More, Mondays, 10 to 11 p.m.
We're the radio station that's all about Northumberland. Listen every day for local news, interviews with local newsmakers, music by local artists, and so much more. We are Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.
Welcome back to the big broadcast. Today we are discussing poverty issues right now. And again, I'm going to be talking about this until there is concrete solutions. So you can look forward to hearing at least one rant a day, probably in perpetuity from this guy anyway, as we talk about this issue. Because you know what? Let's talk about the face of poverty. You know, we've talked about poor bashing. We've talked about, these people are just bums. They just want beer money. Look, the long and short of it is it could be the people living directly next door to you. It's the men and women who are working at the Walmart, the men and women who are loading your bags from the grocery store, people who are pumping your gas, you know. It's the people who are working, in some cases, people who actually have full-time jobs. And by the way, just quick note here, the Cobourg Public Library is closed tonight at 5 p.m. due to inclement weather. So the Cobourg Public Library closing tonight at 5 p.m. So if you're in the library, you might want to get your books to the counter right now. If you're not in the library, yeah, probably just turn around and go home. The face of poverty, though. Let's talk about this because, you know, part of the poor bashing, part of the successful poor bashing that's gone on from, and I'm going to say from conservatives, because primarily this is who you're getting this from, conservatives and the corporate elite. You know, the people that think they know better than everyone else, you know, they talk about this. You know, these are people who could work. Why aren't they working full-time somewhere? Why aren't they? Well, the main reason they're not working full-time somewhere is because no one's giving full-time employment.
Actually, I can speak about myself in that regard. When my husband passed away 2 years ago, I found myself in a position where finding a low income wage, a minimum wage job, was not going to support myself and two kids with a mortgage. So I found myself going back to school. I graduated back in June at the top of my class. I am working in my field, but I only have a part-time contract because that's all that's currently available and out there. Even in the field that I've gone into, it's part-time, it's occasional work contract. So it's not to say that it doesn't pay a decent wage. The hours just simply aren't there. And then when it does come to a living wage, one of the things that we talk about is raising the minimum wage to an actual living wage. And you get some, I have friends who are small business owners who are absolutely convinced that as soon as the minimum wage goes up, they're going to be out of business because they're going to be forced to pay this minimum wage. I'm not saying that the burden has to be put on those people. I'm saying that the burden has to be put on the large corporations who, I'm not saying that they can't earn a profit, but they would not be earning that profit if it were not for their frontline workers. And what is wrong with compensating them properly for all the hard work they do to make you the money that gives you the life you have?
Well, and they wouldn't be earning the profits if the corporate tax rates weren't as low as they were. I mean, the long and short of it is corporations, for the most part in this country, and I'm putting it out there, listeners, and you can argue if you want, the majority of corporations in this country don't pay taxes. And I'm saying that for the simple fact is they have the ability to offshore their profits. They have the ability to transfer, you know, their costs from one jurisdiction to another. So, and, I mean, the greatest example of late was in Great Britain, where Starbucks, who has been operating there since the mid-80s, hasn't paid a cent in taxes to that government. They have not paid the British Crown a dime in taxes because they're able to shuffle their burden. They're able to transfer it from this jurisdiction to another jurisdiction. GM does it all the time. Ford does it. The big multinationals are doing it. The larger corporations in this country are doing it. And their tax accountants will tell you the same thing. Well, they're paying what they're required to pay by law. So a couple of things we need to do. Get rid of those tax loopholes. I mean, you know, it's easy to bash the poor, but let's start putting the blame where it really needs to be.
Why are we talking about nickels and dimes when exactly. We could be talking about dollars?
Yes, exactly. You know, we got corporations in this community right here locally that only hire people when they need them. Therefore, they're using temp agencies who can only keep people employed for 89 days because after 90 days, they got to pay them a severance package because the province changed the rules. Every time there is an initiative by the federal or provincial government to change the rules that will assist workers that are struggling in precarious employment, the opposite then occurs. Someone comes up with a new regime. Well, we can avoid that by doing this. And so we've got a lot of tax avoidance. But what that does is shift the burden to those people that are working poor, people like yourself, Paula, who should be working full time, should have a wonderful full time job in your field, but don't and can't because no one's willing to pay the money to hire them.
I mean, people are being forced to take 2 and 3 jobs just to make ends meet. Mm-hmm. I mean, when it comes to the temp agencies, 15, 20 years ago, they were almost unheard of. Now you can't drive a full city block without seeing a sign for some temp agency hiring to take somebody on.
Mm-hmm. And it's I'm not blaming the temp agencies, don't get me wrong. At least they're helping people get jobs. But the real burden should fall to companies like TransCanada Pipeline, for instance, who are locally here, and some of the other larger companies here that, quite frankly, should be obligated to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, how much money are they receiving from the federal government? $6.2 million was just announced in funding for the CFDCs. Here locally, $6.2 million from the federal government. That's money going to the CFDC to give money to companies so that they can expand their lines, so they can upgrade their facilities, so they can put a new roof in, maybe bring in more automation. But what does that mean for working people? That's $6.2 million in taxpayer money that's going to go to businesses that, for the long and short of it, aren't going to be providing $6.2 million worth of service or employment.
Well, and that's one of the things that having a basic income actually absolves them from. If we come out with a basic income plan, even if we can find something we agree on that we can start with that may actually work, what that does is that absolves all those large corporations mm-hmm. from actually paying a living wage. And it puts the burdens on the taxpayers, the ones that are saying, why should somebody have my tax money? Well, I've got news for them on that part, too, because anyone who spends any money in this province is a taxpayer.
Mm-hmm.
If you pay your rent, you're paying the property taxes on that rental property.
Right.
If you shop locally, which the majority of them do, you are helping those businesses pay taxes, and you're paying provincial sales taxes as well. So to say that low-income people or people who rely on the system are not taxpayers and therefore aren't entitled to that tax money is just wrong thinking.
Absolutely. I mean, let's face it, they're spending 100% of their income on basic living. You know, as you get higher and higher in the income threshold, that number drops from 100% to as low as 15 to 12%, depending on how wealthy you are. And the sad reality is, again, that's just another way of putting it onto the poor. Well, these people don't pay taxes. Well, they do pay taxes. 100% of their income goes to buying groceries, paying rent, paying for utilities, but you know what? The bigger issue that I want to get to here is the fact that taxpayers are in fact subsidizing corporations to pay people low, meager wages. You know, I mean, how long do we got to continue to do this before the people of this country wake up to the reality? I mean, I talked about the $6.2 million for CFDCs. What about the $3 billion a year we're giving to large oil and gas sectors who right now are letting people go like wildfire? It's like 30,000-40,000 people lost their jobs in the oil patch in Alberta, for instance. The people of Alberta are saying to the rest of Canada, we need your help. At the same token, however, the corporations that are letting these people go are still receiving $3.5 billion a year in federal subsidies.
Just today in Peterborough, GE announced that they were laying off 150 people indefinitely. So that's 150 families that now have no income.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's what, with three, on average, three people per family?
Right. So you're talking like 450 people that suddenly have no mm-hmm. disposable income. I mean, people cannot shop if they do not have money. What good does it do to have these large box stores and these large corporations? If people can't afford to buy your product, you are going to go broke.
Mm-hmm. Well, not everybody who works at Home Depot can shop at Home Depot.
Exactly.
What do you think, Deb?
Well, I'm thinking, historically speaking, the minimum wage used to be enough to live on. In the 70s, the early 80s, one wage earner could earn enough to support themselves, a partner, and one child.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that's true because I lived it. And over time, minimum wage has not kept up with inflation or the average industrial wage. And now we find ourselves in a situation where as part-time job growth has gone crazy, where people can't live on it. And it's not all teenagers with after-school jobs.
That's right.
Doing minimum wage work.
Well, those people are actually competing with single mothers and retirees now who require that income to exist, not just buy money so they can get themselves the latest pair of high tops. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to wrap it up, more of our conversation on poverty here in the county, here in the province. And I hope that, you know, some of the things that we've said today, I hope it really has shone a light on this situation for a lot of people. I hope our goal here is obviously is to change the narrative. We are sick and tired of people who live in poverty being held to account for the simple fact that our federal and provincial governments are subsidizing large multinational corporations, the so-called job creators, who in fact don't create jobs.